Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thank you so much for staying with us. This is the story of the decade, I think, where we are seeing some sort of a peace agreement. The 20-point plan by Donald Trump has been at the forefront of this conversation today. He was in Egypt as well, went to sign what he's calling a peace agreement with various other world leaders. And we're here now, I would say, a bittersweet moment. Advocacy Director at Dawn, Raed Sajarah, is on the line with us. Raed, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I would definitely call this a bittersweet moment. How do you reflect on it?
It's an important moment. This is definitely not a peace agreement. Mm. It is a ceasefire agreement. I would say it's a good ceasefire agreement. So far, this is an agreement that has provided two important things for Palestinians. The first one is the end to the daily killings, the genocide that we have witnessed for the past 2 years. We don't have to wake up every morning to more pictures of dead Palestinian babies. And the second is it's the end of Israel's dream to displace all Palestinians out of Gaza and throw them in the sea or in the desert. Palestinians are back to their homes, although their homes have been destroyed. But they're saying this is our land and the Israeli plan for displacement has failed. So it's an important ceasefire agreement to stop the immediate clashes. But peace needs much more than no war. Mm. Peace needs addressing the root causes for injustice. In this case, we're talking about a brutal government in Israel that is committing apartheid, the crime of apartheid every day. They're occupying Palestinian land. There is a lot to deal with there to reach to peace. Peace is still far from where we're at now, but at least we have stopped the killing.
Right. I don't hear people speak of the West Bank and the occupied territories. What's your reflection on what happens there?
Everyone does. Palestinians see their land as one continuous land. And we saw today, even 2 years into the genocide, when Palestinians in Gaza demanded the release of Palestinian prisoners, many of those prisoners were released in the West Bank. There is no distinction. Gaza is not a country on its own. It is only a city and a part of the occupied Palestinian territories. And that includes, of course, the West Bank and Gaza. I would say Palestinians everywhere are dealing with the same dynamics from Israel, and you have different places where Palestinians are located. You know, many Palestinians are in the West Bank and Gaza in occupied Palestinian territory. Many Palestinians are inside the state of Israel, 1948 Palestinians who are Palestinian citizens of Israel. They constitute 20% of the population. And then, believe it or not, half of the Palestinians worldwide, half of us are like me. Palestinians in the diaspora. I was not born in historic Palestine. I did not grow up in historic Palestine. But out of the 12 million Palestinians on planet Earth, half of us are outside of historic Palestine. So wherever we are dealing with the same dynamics of racism and apartheid and attempts to erase our identity and existence by the Israel project, by the project, the Zionist project in Israel. And that's why dealing with that, you're right. Your question is on spot, which is, this is not just about Gaza. This is also not just about the West Bank. It's not just about Palestinians who are Palestinian citizens of Israel. This is about the question of Palestine. Palestinians struggle for self-determination, for equality, for justice. And what we're seeing now is an important step in that direction. but we have not achieved peace or justice yet.
So, of course, the elephant in the room is that while there was this big occasion in Egypt with all these world leaders, I think it was 20 of them attending the signing of what they're calling a peace deal. That's what Trump is calling it. Of course, the two main important players were not there, Israel and Hamas.
That's right. I mean, that actually proves what I'm saying, which is this is not a peace agreement. This is a ceasefire agreement guaranteed by international players. I have never heard or seen a peace agreement where the parties involved in this peace agreement are not present to sign it. This is very funny. Of course, if there was a peace agreement between Palestinians and Israelis, you would have seen Palestinians and Israelis there reaching out to that agreement. That agreement is possible in our lifetime. That agreement that ends Israeli apartheid and Israel's racist, supremacist policies and creates a path for Palestinians to exist on their land with dignity and peace and justice. That is possible. We saw similar situations happen in the past of injustice, including in South Africa during the apartheid era. At one point, there was, a path for justice and peace. Now we're talking about what's going on in Palestine. I think a ceasefire in Gaza was very important. Of course, no one could talk about peace while genocide is going on, while U.S.-made bombs were dropped on Palestinian babies every day. Now, with a ceasefire, with some sort of reconstruction in Gaza and bringing back the normal minimum requirements for life, I think the conditions would be better to discuss how could we end Israeli apartheid, how could we and Israeli occupation, and how could we achieve lasting peace in Palestine?
Again, we also assume that Hamas is speaking on behalf of the Palestinians, and we know that's not true. So all of these conversations excluded the Palestinians. What do you make of, as you pointed out earlier, real lasting peace in Palestine without the consideration of what the Palestinians themselves feel of what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Hamas is definitely a Palestinian group. It represents a lot of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. This was not an agreement between one group and Israel. This was an agreement between different Palestinian factions and Israel. So even during the negotiations, there were representatives of other major factions in Gaza and the West Bank, including al-Jihad, including the some parts of the PLO, like the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Their leadership also went to Cairo and participated in the ceasefire negotiations. So, Israel tries to always frame what goes on in Gaza as some sort of a fight between Israel, the state, and one group called Hamas. This is actually accurate on so many different levels. What's going on is an Israeli war against all Palestinians and all of Palestine. And there is no evidence that this is only one group fighting against Israel. That's not what's going on in real life. That's not what happened in Egypt in the last couple of weeks. It wasn't just one group negotiating. It was all of the major factions attending and discussing that. Now, that said, I want to say there is fragmentation in Palestine. A part of it is due to internal incohesion, and a part of it is due to Israel fragmenting Palestinians and assassinating their leaderships and insisting on creating these divisions. So it's different reasons there, but the reality on the ground is that there is no unified, singular Palestinian leadership that speaks on behalf of the Palestinian people. And that is something that many Palestinians have been trying to push in that direction. Palestinian cohesion, Palestinian unity, makes it much easier for Palestinians and the international community to achieve Palestinian liberation when there is Palestinian cohesion.
What will it take for the relevant parties to really get to the core of the issue? Because things didn't start on October 7th. And we always have, unfortunately, this kind of reporting where the reference is only October 7th. We have a legacy here that's far longer than October 7th, and we need to confront that. What will it take for that real conversation to happen?
It doesn't take much, honestly. It takes for the oppressors to be stopped by the international community and brought to the negotiations table. Throughout history, people in power don't tend to give up power easily. Mm. You know, if you see any group of people who held power, whether it is in Africa or North America or other parts of the world, no one really gives up power because they're nice. Mm. People usually give up power when they feel like they had to. And I feel like what happened in Egypt this week is an example of that. We saw an international uproar, an international uprising around the world, from the east coast of Australia all the way to the west coast of Canada. Millions of people demonstrating and asking their leaders and their governments to stop the genocide. So what we saw this week in Egypt is not the United States and Israel being nice. I mean, they would continue the genocide if they could, but I think they reached a point where the international pressure put them on the negotiations table to stop this genocide. And the same way that South Africa during the apartheid era was brought to a point to negotiate and end its racist policies and apartheid because of international pressure, back in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, the United Nations General Assembly and the United Nations Security Council passed many resolutions imposing sanctions on apartheid South Africa, asking the world to stop trading with apartheid South Africa. And at one point, the sanctions and boycott of apartheid South Africa brought that regime to an end and pushed for a resolution that is just and equitable and peaceful. And I think to answer your question, that is what's going to happen. What's going to happen is to bring these people in power in Israel and the United States to the negotiating table, to bring them to a point where they would end their racist apartheid policies, their occupation, their supremacist policies and laws that treat Palestinians as second-class humans inside of the Green Line or in the West Bank and Gaza. We need international pressure. We need the international community to pressure Israel, because Israel is not going to reform Israel. So that happens through sanctions. That happens through holding Israeli war criminals accountable by arresting them according to the ICC warrants. It happens through accountability. It happens through pressure. It happens around solidarity. And we are at a great moment for the Palestinian struggle for liberation. The last 2 years have accelerated that, and Palestinians have paid a heavy price with our blood and treasure. Tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed to get this world attention. And my message to your audiences and to everyone who is listening to this show is, don't stop now. Because although the genocide might be coming to an end, the root causes for that have not. And we have to continue until Israel's apartheid and occupation are over. We have to keep pushing for accountability and sanctions and justice until we see the full liberation of all people who live in Israel and Palestine now.
I really appreciate you talking to us today. Thank you very, very much. That is advocacy director at Dawn, Raed Shara, who is reflecting on what a big moment this is, obviously. We now have a ceasefire. We had talks happen in Egypt where Donald Trump is calling this, you know, the peace summit. And I just think it's funny that Hamas and Israel were not there, but nonetheless, we have an agreement. And yeah, it seems like the guns and the bombs have stopped. And I do want to bring in into this conversation that music teacher we spoke to a while ago who was in Gaza teaching children music in the middle of all of that. I do want to welcome Ahmed Abu Ashma. Thank you so much, Ahmed, for talking to us. Hello and welcome.
Yeah, hello, everyone. Good evening, everyone. It's my honor to be with you tonight.
It really is an honor to talk to you. The last time you and I spoke, we were not on the radio, but I said, I look forward to meeting you after the war. And here we are. I'm so glad you made it. I'm so glad. I'm so, so happy.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know, you try, always, everyone tried to connect to us, to speak to us, but we have a big problem with internet connection.
Yes.
And the mobile connection. It's not easy to find it. And we have to go up high in the hills to speak to the people.
Ahmed, how are you? How is the mood in Gaza right now?
I'm fine. My family is fine. My group is good. We are now in South Gaza, mm-hmm. in South Gaza, the Gaza Strip, mm-hmm. an area called Zawaida. We displaced from the middle Gaza, the mm-hmm. middle of Gaza City. Mm-hmm. We're going here and trying to find a place we didn't find because, you know, we are a community, the families and their kids that learn the music with us. So we go as a group to find a big piece of land to put our tents there. We didn't find. Only we find the beach. Mm. We sit on the sea right now. Mm. And the situation is very hard and it's very cold. Mm. But we are waiting until the Israeli soldiers fall back to Gaza to go back home. Until now, nothing happened in North Gaza. The Gaza City is destroyed completely. Mm. I tried to go there, but told me don't go. There's no water, no roads. The destruction everywhere, and the situation is horrible there.
You've just said that you're waiting for the Israeli army to pull back. Do you still feel unsafe?
Right now, Gaza is not safe. Mm. The old Gaza City, because there's a lot of militias until now. Mm. They're killing people that they go North Gaza. The side of Gaza City, no one can go there because they're shooting them. And it's not safe. I'm just thinking about stay a while here. To see what is going on, because in my opinion, I don't trust really, because since 2 years they told us stop this madness, and nothing happened. So all the people are thinking the same right now in Gaza. They pray to go back.
What does today mean for you? Everybody is talking about ceasefire. Some people are speaking about a peace deal. Does it feel peaceful to you? What does today feel like?
When we feel peaceful, like it's real end. This war, real end. And the Israeli soldiers pull back until stage three, that's no coming back to war, because there's three stages. Mm. Okay, mm. People prayed from the Israeli soldier broke that ceasefire, mm. because they don't trust them. Because each negotiation was there's a breaking ceasefire. Mm. Mm. So I displaced 15 times. Mm. I displaced 15 times. Displacing mean a horrible thing that you can carry your things, and it's very expensive, and you take your things and you don't know where to go. And even you find a place, even you're not, even you're going to stay in the street. So I don't want to make another mistake going there and the situation is going to be very hard. There's no water, no food, no, they will come back to war and then displaced once again. So I'm going to stay a while. Everyone here is thinking the same.
I totally understand that. When was the last time a bomb was dropped? Can you remember?
Since 3 days.
Okay.
Yes, since 3 days. They threw bombs in Rashid Street, and a lot of people are killed. Until now, there is a lot of bombing in the city with militias and Hamas. In North Gaza, if anyone goes there, he will die. And the Israeli soldiers are still there in Beit Hanun, in Beit Lahia, in Jabalia. So no one goes there until now. And if anyone goes there, he will die.
Has the food started coming in?
Well, again, I'm listening to you.
Has the food started coming in?
The food now is better, you know. Since 2 years, we don't have chocolates, we don't have Coca-Cola, we don't have flour. And now the price is getting better, and we can find flour, we can find things to survive. But no, nothing about meat, about fish, about any protein. Only the beans, the flour is coming. Today I saw a lot of things in the market that I'm not seeing yet, and buy some food for my kids, and they was very happy.
So Ahmed, how do you sustain your families? Where do you earn a living from?
It's a long story, my dear. You know, we have a schedule in each day. The first morning we have to look for water, for drinkable water, because it's not easy to find. There's no electric, only working on solar panel, and it's the sky is cloudy. There's no water to drink. We have to walk far, far away, a long distance to have a gallon of water, and carry it in force. After we find the water, finding water maybe take from you 2 hours, 1 hour, and there's a lot of people are standing to find you. You have support to stay online and to take you to your water. After that, we going to find some food. What is in the market, like beans, like flour, like. Some vegetables are planting here. After that, I make activity for the kid, music activity, and we have some fun, some joy, spreading love and joy for them. After that, I'm trying my best to have a good connection and to talk to my friend, to my fans. Then go back to my tent, take a rest, and it goes like this all the day.
And how do people earn money? You've spoken about a market where you are buying things. How are families earning money?
Okay, now in Gaza City there is no bank.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the Israelis close all the borders. Mm-hmm. For the money or anything to come in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a black market for the money.
Yeah.
There's a percentage of getting the money cash. Mm-hmm. When you get it cash, you have to pay 50% of the money. I think now it's 30% to get it cash. That means $1,000. I was taking it, $500. And the price is very expensive. I buy 1 kilo of flour, like $20. $30. I want, you know, I buy a bucket of flour, 25 kilos of flour. I buy it with $1,500. Okay? And I get the money of $1,500 cash. Like, I pay $3,000 from my bank account to get $1,500. You understand?
I do.
It's horrible. So money doesn't do anything in Gaza. If you have $1 million, that means you have $500K.
Let me ask you about the beautiful children that you've been teaching music to. How is, you know, the group? How are they at the moment? Have you continued to teach music?
I never stopped teaching music because, you know, I'm first of all, I'm healing myself and my colleagues and healing the kids and spreading joy and love. And that makes me strong. That makes me happy. That makes me forget what I'm suffering and let them forget what they're suffering. Mm. The situation of these kids is terrible. You can see the starving inside their eyes. They lose a lot of weight and they don't have a good clothes. I'm trying my best to sometimes to feed them, to bring them food, to bring them clothes. But, you know, after 5 minutes of each class, I can easily see that the madness and the starving in their eyes are disappearing slowly. Mm. So they run away with music from this madness situation. A lot of kids, they have trauma. Mm. They was not speaking. They have problem with talking after they see dead people in the streets, dead bodies, people apart, you know. But I'm very happy that they are good now. Mm. I'm using the music therapy with them. But thank God. The situation is better now. It's better than before. Mm. But we will try our best to help them.
So you seem like you are skeptical. You're saying that not everybody's sure about moving back home because it's not safe. Are people hopeful that the ceasefire will stay, that there will eventually be peace?
I'm losing you. Can you repeat again?
Yes. I was asking if I understand you were saying that, you know, people are worried about going back to where they came from, back home. But is there hope that things will be okay? What is the mood like?
Oh, you know, I'm working in the streets. I have a lot of neighbors. We talk about that, and there is a hope. Mm. But 50% of hope and 50%, they are not trusting. Okay, so that's they are afraid from going back because they want to see if. Is it a real ceasefire or not? Mm. If it's real ceasefire, they can go back. Mm. And if it's not, it depends. I told you in the three stages. The first one is release the hostages, and the second one is the dead bodies of the hostages, and the third one is taking weapons of Hamas. If that's done and everything's gonna be okay, they can go back. They are waiting for stage three. This is what people talk about.
So today, you're just waiting to get to the stage three of this agreement?
Most of the people, yeah. I mean, some of the people go back to Gaza City because they have houses there. some of the houses are standing, and they said, I'm sitting in tent, and it's cold and wind, so I have the home right there. I can sit from the walls and the ceiling, you know. It's better than tent. And it doesn't matter how much it costs him to this place. But and most of the people here live in tents, and all their houses are destroyed. So they're going to go right there in Gaza City in tents. And right now in Gaza City, there's no water. It's not easy to get water. So they decide to stay here after they can make the roads, bring water. They're sure that the ceasefire is real, then they can go back, because it's the same here in tent and there in tent.
Ahmed, I'm so thankful that I have had an opportunity to speak to you again. I really wish you all the best.
You are welcome, my dear.
I wish you all the best, you and your family and those wonderful singing voices that you keep going alive. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thanks for everybody. I hope that peace come in all over the world soon. We never lose hope. Inshallah. I hope that.
Ahmed Abu Amsha is a manager and a teacher and a founder of Gaza Bird Singing Project. And what he's been doing in the middle of all of this is teaching children music.
Click kaya959.co.za. This is how we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.